Well, it's Chuck Coughlin here again on BreadboxMedia.com, setting the record straight. This time, enlightening the record with Christmas, the Christmas spirit, with some small gifts from me to you.
Well, it's Christmas time, and I have a few things I want to share with you. There are a few small gifts that I give to my friends and family, and God wouldn't like it if I didn't offer something of myself on his birthday. Small, almost inconsequential gifts he's given to me. So in this setting the record straight, I'm just passing them on to you. This first one is some of my piano playing. Some of you may know that for 25 years I've played in resorts in Florida. Beachfront hotels where I could look at the moonlight on the surf out the window as I played a grand piano. The best way to make a living I ever came up with. I was usually at one place 7 or 8 years. And for some reason I'd move on, maybe better money or bankruptcy of the place I was playing. But what a rewarding career it was. And at Christmas time, I used to play this takeoff on Vince Guaraldi's Christmas Time Is Here from his Charlie Brown series. And people liked it. I used to play the Nutcracker Suite and a whole lot of other things. They were Christmas tunes. For what it's worth, from the Charlie Brown Christmas special, here's my takeoff on Vince Guaraldi's Christmas Time Is Here.
Thank you.
You know, I never did it the same way twice. That recording is from that very period of time in my life when I was playing at the Thistle Lodge on the beautiful beach under the palm trees bending in the moonlight just before Christmas Eve. Yeah, I went to a Boysendorfer in an art center nearby in the few weeks before Christmas and recorded it. The day after, there had been an evening that was positively aglow with that Yuletide feeling among the patrons in the restaurant. And they felt it, and I felt it, and it went back and forth in a big circular building, feeling like two logs igniting each other in a warm fire in a fireplace. Like the fire between two logs. Like the fire between two logs. More alive. Synchronistic. Sometimes I would go on and on with that piece. I could tell when they'd had enough. Sometimes it was quite long. Hearing that improvisation go on and on brings back memories of my Christmases past. A Christmas reverie.
Being piano player at the Thistle Lodge on Sanibel Island for years. I was there about 8 years. A lot of warm, sunny, delicious Christmases.
I used to create my own Christmas cards. Actually, every Christmas before this one.
2 years ago, there was a verse in my card about the Virgin Mary. I've altered it a little bit. Maybe improved it. Maybe not. So I'll be making a few homemade cards again this year to send to those special to me. You know, when you think of it, this program is my Christmas card to you, our dear family of listeners. It's a homemade card on my part. A little bouquet of music and words coming straight from my heart to yours. Anyway, here's the words I'm going to put in that card this year. They're coming to you on the inspired path of their breadboxmedia.com. This surprising and excellent creation of Leo Brown and his staff. So Merry Christmas to the family of listeners, to all the amazingly talented contributors, and just Merry Christmas to everybody. Now listen to the words that are in this Christmas card. It's called The Labyrinth and the Rose. Cathedral at Chartres, icon of her body, gravid with the sacred labyrinth. Sacred labyrinth, at your core the six petals of the mystical rose. Await our foot tread, mystical rose. In your womb, the perfect circle of the sun awaits nativity, perfect sun. In your fusion, God flesh marries, woman marries universe. God flesh and woman and universe. In your fusion, time's bend and curve leads us on the way. The God flesh woman universe is born upon an angel horse, angel horse. You are the light that comes bearing the bride and mother. Light horse. You are the rainbow promise fused into white light. White horse. White as her soul. You come bearing her, bearing God, bearing pure light. Pure light. You are the path, the one through the labyrinth of her womb. Her womb. Ark of all living beings, tabernacle. Of the one, whose breath and flesh and blood nurtures upon her breath and flesh and blood. Breath and flesh and blood of the one who nurtures his lambs, nurtures his sheep. Her womb, where forever will remain his living cells, the living cells of his body. At last assuming her body aloft to his body, his body. It is to his body we are bound. I spent 30 Christmases in Florida. There was something wonderful about it, but there was something missing. Celebrating Christmas in Florida, of course, lacks the snow and a lot of the accoutrements we we associate with a classic Christmas. But we did have enough chill that we could light a fire in the fireplace. And believe me, around Christmas time, January, February, we sat around the fire and listened to Christmas music or played Christmas music. I was blessed in having some very talented friends, writers, musicians. We had a lot of fun sharing stuff at Christmas time. For a couple of years, I did a compact disc as a Christmas card that I'd copy and send out to friends as a Christmas card. One year, I did a little improvisation of words and music on the bread and wine of the Eucharistic feast at Christmas. Called it Christmas Bread and Christmas Wine. And here's what that sounded like. Christmas bread. Baking bread in the kitchen air, angel of summer grain. The plumaged aroma chants, echoes resurrect ghost meadows from our store of winter provender. In the batter bowl, the yeast bloomed, fragrant with ideas, swelling into a Parthenon. The white dome's oculus punctured, but rising again and again. To worship those ideal proportions, arching across starry night, yearning upward with a heaven lust that spills from the oven into the kitchen air, drawing up the hunger that swells the gestations of our waiting souls. On our wooden table, the perfect loaves lay swaddled in linen, about to quicken our lives in the little communion. On the great stone table, the Christmas gift of the fields, angel of summer grain wafting with a child in her arms, small package enclosing infinity, burgeoning with revenues of grace, lightening our wings.
So that is the Christmas bread, an incarnation of the body of Christ, a host to the actual body of Christ, the true substance.
Next, Christmas wine. Christmas wine. There is an ordinary wine that accompanies well our simple bread, and everything from the fields that arrives on our table, transformed in the kitchen through art and genius. There is a Christmas wine, as humble as always, yet somehow finer without reason, perhaps transformed at the table through our circle of blessing, which feels somehow linked by a new pair of infant hands. Baby God, carpenter God, fisherman God, chef, steward and friend, God waits upon his little brothers and sisters. The apostles told of his delight in grilling fish for them and in pouring an ordinary wine so that a calm would descend. And now at dinner, as we follow his way, ease opens our arms, our words, our eyes shine as we talk, for we know that tonight is Christmas. Thank you. arrive on the great table, and under the gift of hands we'll be transformed and find us as we are, already in the midst of transformation. Is a wine full of grace, containing gifts for each of us, wrapped in little tongues of fire, a smile, a caress. The child God steps down to bless, to tell again of his dream. Souls will tread beyond the stars to where a mother wine beats in the heart of God. The next thing I'm going to play for you is on a synthesizer. This is a recording made in that month that I borrowed a synthesizer. Haven't had time to get back to this, to keyboard synthesizers, which I much regret. You got to specialize, and I've gone too many directions already. But it was near Christmas, and I cut some tracks, and thinking about the three wise men and what it must be like for them crossing over the dark night in the Middle Eastern desert, following the great star, the star of wonder. And so here's sort of a moody take on that. So here's what it sounded like on that chilly December night, just after Christmas, in Sanibel Island. Thank you. So let's continue our merrymaking this Christmas with some old sentimental Christmas gifts given again. Ah, we've got one or two Christmas gifts left open. This next one is a story. It's a short story that I wrote at Christmas 2 years ago, and it's about music.
It was written for you, people just like you. Here's how it goes.
Cow Music is another short story about Christmases in Kentucky. The year is 1957, and the place is about 50 miles from Lexington. Cow Music. Don't be afraid. They said what? That's what I heard somebody saying. My grandpa repeated, they said don't be afraid. Of what? Son, I don't know, but it scared the heck out of me when they said it. This was yesterday when you were doing the milking? Both yesterday and the day before. Both times it was still dark, round 4 probably. I was sitting there on the stool, milking Fabiola, Estokim, and Paula, and whistling an aria for them, when I heard somebody high up in the barn rafters say, don't be afraid. So what did you do? Well, it had a reverse effect on me. I got out of there fast. And now it's happened again. That's why I came up here to the big house. Because it scared you again? Yes. I mean, no. No, David, it didn't scare me this time. I realized it had been saying, don't be afraid, in such a gentle way that this time I wasn't afraid. Was it a man's voice? Hard to tell. I knew that Granddad just wanted somebody to talk to, even a 15-year-old kid, so we sat there at the kitchen table until the whole family showed up and made breakfast. By that time, the cows were mooing away over their distended udders, so Granddad went back down to the barn and finished the milking. That happened in October. He didn't mention that he heard the voice again for a long time after that. Winter settled in. Christmas was coming. And then it would be the new year of 1957. So there was a lot else to think about in the big house. My dad and mom, brothers and sisters, and I lived there in the big house on Granddad's farm. The big house had been Granddad's house until Grandmom Ellie died. Then because he didn't want to be the only one living on the farm, he gave the big house over to my dad and moved a few hundred yards downhill to the 3-room cabin in the holler where he had been born. 85 years before. That's where he and Grandma had started their married life. There was no electricity, but he liked it there. The cabin stood among tall trees on a ledge above a stream. You could hear water babbling all night long. My granddad was a complicated man. He had been famous, too. Long before I came on the scene, he had been an opera singer who performed leading roles at La Scala, Covent Garden, and the Met. We had some phonograph records of his glorious singing, made when he still had a voice. He made a very popular recording of the Cantique Noël, O Holy Night. My family always thought that nobody had ever come along that could equal the glorious sound he made, especially when he swept up to the high B-flat near the end. He had kept his voice into his early 70s. However, after Grandma Ellie suddenly died, he found that he couldn't sing anymore. He had lost his voice. That all happened before I was born, so I had never heard him sing in person or talk normally, for he'd lost his resonant speaking voice, too. After that, he could only speak in a hoarse whisper. Yet he was resilient. He kept plowing on ahead. I learned from watching him to find joy in ordinary and extraordinary things. He had a lot of sophisticated tastes in the fine arts, but made sure to also keep his feet on the ground and his hands in the soil. He was well into his 80s, so his hands in the soil activities had been cut back to getting up at 3 a.m. to milk his 3 cows. For some reason, he had named them Fabiola, Estokium, and Paula, after the 3 women that did a lot of the work in compiling and translating the first Bible in the 4th century. If I happened to be awake at 3:30 a.m., I could hear him coming up from the cabin whistling, calling to the cows so they would call back, all 3 mooing together as they waited for him to come climbing up the hill to the barn to give them relief.
If I sat up in bed from my attic window, I could see him coming, surrounded by the glow of his favorite old kerosene lantern. When he went into the barn, you could see lantern lights streaming out through the slats of the barn, so the whole thing was like a lamp. He had made a sort of shrine to Grandma Ellie in there. It was on a little table next to where he did the milking, so he always rested the lantern there. On the table he had put some of her personal objects, and there was a framed wedding photograph of him and Grandma Ellie. She was carrying an elegant bouquet of large roses. They were both very young and didn't have much money, so she was just wearing an ordinary dress. However, her head was crowned with an exquisite Irish lace bridal veil that had been worn by her mother on her own wedding day back in Kerry. It looked very fine and must have been quite expensive. Granddad and Grandma were going to go on their honeymoon to Cumberland Falls, but somebody had stolen their luggage right off the back of their buggy in front of the church. They didn't have the means to replace what they needed, so they canceled their honeymoon and just went home to the cabin. The beautiful veil had been in Ellie's suitcase. She had wanted to pass it on to her children someday. They said she never really got over the loss of it. So Granddad would sit on the stool milking the cows by lantern light, even though the barn had electric lights. As he worked, he liked to contemplate the wedding photograph and think back. If my window was open, I could listen to him whistling those elaborate bel canto arias that made the cows happy. They would bellow along in a kind of dissonant chorus of cow contentment, and I would go back to sleep. Some days before Christmas, he heard the voice say the same words again, "Don't be afraid." Or so he told us when he came up for breakfast. I caught Mom and Dad sharing a knowing look. They changed the subject right away, and we kids went on eating pancakes like everything was normal. The next day and the next, he said he heard it again, now almost singing, "Don't be afraid," over and over for a minute or two. The next night, I made sure to be awake when he came up to the barn. I was afraid to intrude. Granddad had noticed that when someone else was with him, the voice never came. So I just stayed inside and watched from my attic window. I saw the glow of the lantern filling the barn with light and heard the cows mooing and Granddad whistling Christmas carols, but that's all I could hear. That night it snowed a snow that lasted through Christmas. We were eating breakfast on the morning of Christmas Eve when Granddad said he heard it again. Nobody said anything for a minute. He said it was becoming more musical every day. He said that he had started to take comfort from the sound of the voice. He could tell that Fabiola, Eustochium, and Paula did too. They became absolutely still when they heard it. We nodded and went on eating pecan waffles that were so good that nobody noticed when Granddad went over and picked up the phone directory and started looking through the yellow pages. But when we realized that he had called St. Benedict's Catholic Church and asked to speak to Father Theodore, we all stopped eating and listened. We weren't Catholics, and we didn't usually go to any church. We heard Granddad ask the priest if he would come out to see what could be done about the voice in the barn. We listened to his half of the conversation. "No, I'm sorry to bother you." "No, I'm not Catholic, Father." "No, actually, I am pretty sure that there is no God," Granddad was saying, "but I still need your help." "Well, sometimes I hear a voice coming from high up in the barn that says, 'Don't be afraid.'" "Well, I'm calling you because who else would I call? The police would think I'm a lunatic and lock me up." "That's right. The voice said, 'Don't be afraid.' And I'm not. Or not much, anyway." "Well, I do need your help in particular, because I don't know if it's a ghost, a trick, a celestial voice, or a demon." "No, I'm not afraid. I just wanted your opinion. It's going to take a priest, and you're the only one in the county." "Why you? Well, because if it's demonic, it would take a priest. Think about my poor cows. Look, you might have to perform an exorcism. Priests are supposed to do that. My cows? Oh, there's three of them. Fabiola, Eustochium, and Paula. No, it's not a coincidence. I did name them after St. Jerome's assistants. That's right, the three women that helped him compile and translate the Bible. No, don't get the wrong idea. I'm not a Christian at all, not anymore. I don't have any use for all that. God let Ellie die. And as far as I'm concerned, then he died too. Oh, I apologize. I spoke out of turn there. I'm fine. I just wish with all my heart that I could be with Ellie on Christmas. It just gets bad around Christmas. You will? You'll come out? Great. But you'd have to get here around 3 or 3:30 a.m. Oh, right. Midnight Mass. I could drive down and pick you up after that. Oh, okay. Since you're doing all this, I think I'll make a deal and agree to come in time for the whole thing. Starts at midnight, right? Okay. I'm so pleased you'll come out. There's definitely a voice. I can't thank you enough. He hung up. He was beaming. Then he realized we were all looking at him and were waiting for him to say something. Father Theodore will be here in the morning. Maybe we could fix something good for breakfast, he said. Of course we could, said Mom. He made me feel a lot better. He says he doesn't think we have a demon in the barn. Well, how did he decide that, she said. 'Cause the voice says, don't be afraid. He says that whenever people see an angel, angels always say that. My dad asked, but why would something so beautiful and inoffensive as an angel have to say that? That stopped Granddad for a moment. Well, he said. Could be that there are things so much more beautiful than you'd ever seen before, so glorious, that the first sight of them scares the ever-loving pants off you. So Granddad picked up Father Theodore and brought him out to the farm at 3:30 a.m. to sit in the barn while the cows were milked. I didn't want to miss this for the world. So they let me come down to the barn, too. As you might expect, the voice didn't show up. Father Theodore and I just sat there listening to Granddad whistle and the cows moo. There was not a whisper of any other sound. Granddad seemed embarrassed. Don't be concerned, Father Theodore said. I'm enjoying the whistling and mooing concert. Maybe it was a demon and I scared it off, Granddad said. How? Because, as you well know, when I came to pick you up for midnight mass, I broke down and took the sacraments for the first time in a long time. Decades. Maybe the voice is afraid of me now that I took communion. Do you regret it? Heck no. Took courage? No, well, confession was a bit scary. Since I'm already here, Father Theodore said, just in case, why don't I go ahead and perform the exorcism? I would appreciate that. I don't think you have a problem here, but just in case. Good, I agree. Do you think you could whistle the Regina Caeli from Cavalleria Rusticana while I do it? You got it. And Granddad began whistling as Father Theodore placed his stole around his neck and began walking around reading from his prayer book. He gave us each a little card so we could voice the responses when he nodded at us. Christ hear us, Father Theodore said, and we answered. Christ graciously hear us. Then he called on a long list of angels and saints to pray along with us. He finished it with an impressive prayer that included phrases like, depart, persecutor of the innocent, full of lies and cunning, give way to Christ. Do not think of despising my command because you know me to be a great sinner. It is God himself who commands you. At times he sprinkled holy water all around and on Fabiola, Eustochium, and Paula. He put his hands on them and blessed them. I think they liked it. I felt relieved. Then we went up to the big house. Breakfast was the delicious pecan waffles again, Father Theodore and Granddad started telling each other all the rabbi, priest, minister jokes. We got to laughing so much that our sides hurt. Then, despite the noise, we heard Fabiola, Eustochium, and Paula mooing all together. Granddad stood up. The sounds they made were strange, but also beautiful in a way. "Well, I be," Granddad said. "Listen to that. It's like music." I listened and could hear what he meant. The mooing of cows is usually more discordant, and to our ears seems to have no rhyme or rhythm. Father Theodore was wide-eyed. "Have they sounded like that before?" "No, never," Dad said. "They're usually pretty quiet after they get milked, unless something's bothering them." "I'll go down and see," said Granddad. He went and opened the door and stood in the doorway. "Listen, everybody," he exclaimed. "Do you recognize what that sounds like?" Then we all followed him out on the back porch. Everything remained shrouded in pre-dawn darkness, although a warm lantern glow still shone from between the slats of the barn.
"Stay here. Let me take a look," Granddad said and started down.
Halfway there, he stopped and called back to us in a clear voice.
"I know you think I've gone senile, but Fabiola, Eustochium, and Paula are singing what sounds like the orchestral introduction to O Holy Night."
Then he turned and almost ran the rest of the way into the barn. I didn't know he could move like that. What amazed me even more was that his speaking voice sounded clear and resonant. The mooing went on and on. It did sound in tune. It was beautiful. Then I heard Granddad begin to sing in a soft voice. It was the voice from his recordings. His voice had come back. "O holy night, when the stars were brightly shining." The glow from the barn seemed to grow. He sang, "It is the night of the dear Savior's birth." Fabiola, Eustochium, and Paula mooed on in deep harmonious union with him as his voice opened, blooming as he sang. "Fall on your knees." He swept the words up on the great span of his voice. Magnificent. I looked around. We were all standing like open-mouthed statues on the porch. Father Theodore got down on his knees and brought his hands together in prayer. The barn became illumined. Granddad sang a long, spinning sculpture of sound, drawing it out from his soul-woven body. "O night!" It became a kind of glory flowing from the God-woven baby. "When Christ was born." The barn was blazing with a brilliant light, as if it were a lens before a furnace. Eastward on the brink of dawn, the sun was sending up columns of rose and violet light in the slow gestation of an atmospheric altarpiece. Granddad was approaching the lofty phrase at the peak of this song. Sounding like a mighty organ, the cows sang out, harmonizing in a kind of ecstasy. "O night, divine," Granddad sang. "O night." There was a long breath, and then he sang, "Divine." It was a golden sound, thrilling, suspending time. Then he diminished to a whispered, "O night, divine." And the voices of Fabiola, Eustochium, and Paula drifted into silence. The sun was filling the clear day with light. The light in the barn had disappeared. We waited for Granddad to reappear. When he didn't, we ran down the hill and into the barn. We found him on his knees, slumped against the table of his little shrine to Ellie. His hands were clasped in prayer. It must have been sudden. He was gone before we even got there. He looked as if he was at peace. From the photograph, the gifted young tenor and his happy new wife smiled down at him. He was gone. We didn't know what to do at first. We watched as Father Theodore anointed his forehead and prayed for him. We were in shock. We now know that it had been her voice. She must have come for him, to take him with her at last. We all knew it had to be Ellie. To tell us so, she left gifts for us. She left us signs that it was her. What we could not see until we lifted Granddad from the table, that he was lying on a bouquet of roses. It was not crushed at all. It was fresh and magnificent. The bouquet was exactly like the one in the wedding photograph. How did it get there? Ellie brought it to him. Where else could it have come from? It was not an identical bouquet. It was the same bouquet. We know that, because we also found that she had brought something that she always wanted to give to the family. Grandma Ellie had left a miracle lying on the shrine table, just beyond her husband's hands, clasped in prayer. It was her mother's bridal veil, the one fashioned from exquisite Irish lace.
So that's my gift to you, my Christmas story. I call it cow music. That's it.
We move on to more conventional celebrations of Christ's birth. But wait a minute, wasn't there an ox there? I'm sure he had something to say about the proceedings. I'm getting the sense that we're approaching the end of my Christmas gifts program. I have one more thing I want to play on the piano for you. I certainly wish you all have a Merry Little Christmas. Thanks for joining me. I'm Chuck Coughlin, and this is BreadboxMedia.com.